This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Police in Brazil and South Africa arrested 14 people last week for their alleged involvement in an international organ-selling scheme. According to the charges, middlemen matched desperately ill customers with desperately poor donors who sold one of their kidneys for as much as $10,000. Later in the program, we'll switch focus and talk about the federal government's recommendations to the media industry about misleading ads for weight loss products. But first, the market for human organs. As surgical technique and technology improve, the black market in human organ transplants is growing. Some say a legalized market would help those in need and reduce the illegal trade in human body parts. Others argue that putting a price tag on an organ is immoral and unethical. If you've had a transplant, or if you're waiting for one, would you be willing to buy a kidney? Should people have the right to sell part of their body if they want to? Our number here in Washington is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. And the email address is TOTN@NPR.org. And joining us now is Michael Wines, the Johannesburg bureau chief of the New York Times. He joins us from his home in Johannesburg, South Africa. Good of you to be with us today.
A pleasure.
So describe how this scheme allegedly worked, would you?
Well, they haven't completely unraveled it yet, but on its face, it appears fairly simple. There were a group of people in Brazil who recruited impoverished Brazilians in need of money to donate their organs. And there were people in South Africa with access to medical facilities who set up transplants. And once the matching donors were found, they were flown to South Africa. Their kidneys were extracted. They were transplanted into waiting recipients. And the donors were flown back to Brazil, where they got anywhere from $6,000 to $10,000.
So who is that exactly has been arrested?
Well, they've arrested two Israelis and nine Brazilians in northern Brazil. They have arrested two Israelis and one South African in South Africa. It's difficult to tell who these people are. There have not been that many details, but one of the ones arrested in South Africa actually was a man who had received a kidney transplant just a week before.
So one of the recipients of the kidneys. Why was it conducted in so many places, so widespread?
Well, it's a good question. A question here, of course, is why South Africa? And there are a number of potential answers for that. One is that 10 years after the fall of apartheid, this is still in some ways a society with a lot of very loose rules and a lot of criminal activity. There are a lot of international criminal gangs operate in South Africa. And so it makes it easier, I think, for lawless activities to occur in certain parts of this country.
And the other very good medical facilities, too.
Well, that's the other thing I was going to say. The medical facilities here are absolutely outstanding. People tend to forget it, but the first successful heart transplant in history was performed here in 1967, almost exactly on this date.
Now, what laws were broken? Are there sufficient laws on the books for what has to be a fairly new crime?
Depends on what you mean by sufficient, I guess. There are laws in both Brazil and in South Africa that prohibit the selling of human tissue for profit. In the case of the one in South Africa, the fines really are almost laughable. They're a couple of $100 in American money and a prison sentence of up to a year. But, as a practical matter, these prison sentences apparently are not often levied.
So what we would consider in this country a misdemeanor, then?
That's right.
And that might be another reason this is being conducted in South Africa.
Well, that's entirely a possibility. It's speculation at this point, but it wouldn't surprise me. I'm sitting here now. The gentleman who, in fact, received the kidney from a Brazilian man who was paid $6,000 was fined $793.
And how much did he pay for the kidney? Obviously, the man from Brazil got $6,000, but the recipient, how much did he pay to the broker?
Well, there hasn't been an exact figure published, but in general, in these transactions in South Africa and elsewhere, the figures run between $100,000 and $200,000.
So considerable profit to be made here.
Yes.
Michael Wines, thanks very much.
No problem.
Michael Wines is the Johannesburg Bureau Chief of the New York Times. He joined us from his home in Johannesburg, South Africa. And with us now is David Kasserman, a professor of economics at Auburn University in Auburn, Alabama. He believes that creating some economic incentives for donating organs could not only help alleviate the growing demand, but would help diminish the growing illegal international market. He's written about his idea in his book called The U.S. Organ Procurement System, A Prescription for Reform, and he joins us now from his home in Auburn, Alabama. Good to have you with us on Talk of the Nation.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
First of all, I guess we have to make it clear. You've been through an organ transplant yourself.
Yes. Actually, I've been through two. I've had two kidney transplants. I rejected the first one, but the second one has been successful. Both of these were cadaveric donors.
Meaning they were done through the system as it exists now. You didn't go out and buy one.
Well, cadaveric meaning, yes, they were done through the system as it exists now in the United States, and the kidneys came from deceased individuals as opposed to living donors.
I see. That's what it means. Okay. Now, you've studied the problem of organ availability and the black market, and you think you've come up with an economic solution. What is it?
Well, I hesitate to take credit for authorship of the solution. The solution of using a market to resolve a shortage goes back a long time, and in particular for the organ shortage, there has been a substantial literature on this subject for the last at least 20 years, and other people have proposed the same thing. But the bottom line is a shortage is an economic phenomenon of a discrepancy between demand and supply at a current price, and the price paid to organ donors in the United States and elsewhere, the legal price, has been set at zero. And that was done in 1984 in a bill called the National Organ Transplant Act. And from an economic point of view, there's virtually no product on earth that if you set the price at zero, you don't end up with a shortage. So the shortage is created entirely by this public policy that says that we cannot pay organ donors or the families of the deceased donors. Everybody else in the process gets paid. The physician gets paid. The hospital gets paid. But the people that provide the input that make the whole thing possible cannot receive any compensation or financial incentive to cooperate.
There would be, you would think, problems in determining what the price would be.
Well, I don't think there would be particular problems in determining that. I think that the current situation is such that we would have trials conducted, and this is what, of course, has been proposed. There are a couple of bills in Congress right now being sponsored. One is in the Senate being sponsored by Bill Frist from Tennessee, and the other is by Mr. Greenwood in the House, and both of these.
We should point out that Senator Frist is both a doctor and a Republican majority leader in the Senate, so this is a bill that may get some attention.
And he's also a heart transplant surgeon. So he knows he has seen firsthand the death and suffering caused by the shortage, and therefore I think has additional incentive to sort of pay attention to this policy issue and consider alternative solutions. But no, I think that trials could be conducted in a controlled environment, and families could be offered a varying amount of payment ranging from, say, $1,000 to $5,000. The payment could be an outright payment. It could be in the form of a tax credit. They could also, of course, be offered the option of donating the organ for free. They don't have to accept payment. They could accept payment that's donated to a charity. And these trials, I think, could come close to establishing something near a market clearing price that would resolve the shortage and increase the supply sufficiently to start drawing down this backlog of patients that is built up from the last 20 or 30 years of shortages.
Where would the money come from?
Well, that's the interesting thing, is the transplants are so efficient in terms of treatment of diseases. In particular, a kidney transplant is much cheaper than keeping a patient alive on dialysis. And currently, dialysis costs are paid for by the federal government under Medicare, under something called the End-Stage Renal Disease Program. And the saving from getting patients off of dialysis onto transplantation would more than cover the cost of acquiring the organs from the families of the deceased.
And you're talking about the deceased. What about living donors?
Well, this is something that most of the people writing in this area have not advocated markets for living donors. At the same time, people who have considered the issue, by and large, have not really found much of a problem with it. We're using living donors now. And in fact, I think it was the year before last, the number of kidney donors in the United States from living donors exceeded the number of cadaveric donors for the first time. And the reason for this is we're placing greater and greater emphasis on living donors because of the shortage of cadaveric donors. And if we could resolve the shortage of cadaveric donors, we could pull back and not rely as heavily on living donors. So most people that are advocating these financial incentives to organ donors have indeed not made an argument for paying living donors at all.
And again, cadaveric donors are people who've just died in car accidents and
yes,
things like that.
Yes, and there are two approaches you could do with this with cadaveric. You could enter into sort of a futures contract with a potential cadaveric donor ahead of time where his estate gets paid, or you could have what is in effect a spot market where the families that are approached after the person has died would be approached in the same way they're approached today, with the same consideration and concern and care for the loss that they've suffered, and have an additional tool available, and that is the payment for the agreement to donate. A lot of these families, the person that's passed away, it's an unexpected death, and a lot of times it's a fairly young person. And a lot of the families that just aren't equipped to, don't have the money put aside for a funeral or anything, and I think would very much appreciate some sort of compensation.
Our phone number is 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK, email TOTN at NPR.org. And Brad joins us on the line from Denver, Colorado.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
I am scheduled to be a live kidney donor in March and will be donating a kidney to my father. And believe me, I would love to not have to be putting my life at risk to help my father. But nonetheless, I am still not a proponent of paying people to donate their organs, even in a cadaveric situation, for really a couple of reasons. One is I think it will not actually solve the problem because many of the reasons that families give for not even honoring their family members' wishes to donate their organs have a lot of, really don't have anything to do with money, and I don't think money will necessarily solve that problem by dangling several thousand dollars in front of someone at a very vulnerable and upsetting time. And I frankly would like to see, especially in the kidney area, more money being earmarked for research for whether it's artificial organs or other solutions to the shortage. But I really do have a hard time with the concept of paying someone to donate a body part, and I think once you cross that line, it's very difficult to go back.
Is this something that you even thought about?
Compensation?
Yeah, or maybe going out to find somebody who would sell you something.
No, I mean, I can tell you that I've been approached by email, unfortunately, from an individual out of the country offering to sell his kidney to my father. And I forwarded that email to the National Kidney Foundation and asked them to inform that person that it's illegal and immoral. And they were familiar with that individual. So there clearly is a market out there. But I think it is just the wrong solution on a lot of different levels.
Brad, we have to take a short break now. Can you stay with us over the break?
Sure.
Okay, hang on, and we'll be back to talk with Brad in Denver, Colorado, and also David Kasserman as we continue our discussion about the ethics and the economics of selling human organs. If you'd like to join the conversation, 800-989-8255 or TOTN at NPR.org. I'm Neil Conan. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Neil Conan in Washington, and you're listening to Talk of the Nation. We're discussing human organ transplants and the growing black market in human organs. Our guest is Dr. David Kasserman. He's a professor of economics at Auburn University in Auburn, Alabama, the author of The U.S. Organ Procurement System, A Prescription for Reform. And just before the break, we had a caller on the line, Brad, who's with us in Denver, Colorado. You still there, Brad?
I am.
And he's waiting to donate one of his kidneys to his father. And, Brad, you said you were approached by somebody on email. How did they get your name?
Well, the National Kidney Foundation has a pretty extensive website, and they have a section dedicated to live kidney donors. It's really sort of a chat room where potential donors can offer support and advice. You can post messages and that kind of thing. And I actually left my email address, and I can say that I received a lot of support from donors who have gone through the experience and unfortunately received this email from someone looking to sell their organ.
I guess we've come to expect, low mortgage rate spam, organ spam. That's extraordinary, Brad. I guess it isn't spam. It was directed just to you, but nevertheless, pretty unusual. David Kasserman, what about Brad's earlier point and his opposition to the idea of establishing a market?
Well, his first point was he doesn't think it'll solve the problem. That's pure speculation. Two things. First of all, there have been surveys conducted that suggest that, in fact, it would solve the problem, and it would solve the problem at a fairly low price. Now, Brad's in a situation where he's willing to donate a kidney to his dad, and I think that's great. It's not Brad that's the problem. The problem is people who aren't willing to donate, and it is those people that are expected to be more influenced by the financial incentives. And, of course, he's right in that. I mean, you don't waive $1,000 in front of somebody. We don't send used car salesmen in, to do the negotiation. Everything would be done just as it's done today, in a caring and a sensitive manner. Money is not a substitute for compassion, and it would be done in a very, very compassionate way. And basically, they would be given the option of accepting some money, or, like I said, having money donated to their favorite charity, and so on. But survey research suggests that in fact it would solve the problem. The second thing is, the bills that are being proposed and what is being advocated and has now been endorsed by the AMA summer before last, is to conduct trials to answer that very question. Will it work? And this is basically what people are advocating today, is let's give it a chance and see if it'll work on a controlled trial basis. The last thing I'll say is, the more research thing always sounds great. We've been doing it for 30 years. We're losing 6,000 people a year unnecessarily. And to just wave your hand and say, well, let's do more research, is basically condemning another 6,000 people next year to die because of the shortage of organs. And I think we need to pay a little more attention to these people that are on these waiting lists. There's now 83,000 people waiting for organs, and at the current collection rate, half of them will not live to receive the transplant.
Yeah. Brad, I just wanted to say before we let you go to wish both you and your father the best of luck.
Thank you.
I appreciate it. Joining us now is Arthur Kaplan. He's director of the Center for Bioethics at the University of Pennsylvania, the author of Ethics and Organ Transplants. He's with us from his office in Philadelphia, and welcome to Talk of the Nation.
Hi, Neil.
What are the domestic and international laws regarding the buying and selling of human tissue?
Well, in the United States, it's illegal to sell organs and most tissues. That was passed as part of the National Organ Transplant Act in 1984, and that legislation was provoked, if you will, by the appearance of a man who said he was going to set up a brokerage in organs, bring people in from overseas as well as domestically, and it turned out that he had a long track record of scurrilous activity, many Medicaid fraud indictments, and was not a appealing fellow. So Congress looked at this, and led by the then congressman from Tennessee, Al Gore, pushed through fairly with great unanimity in the House and the Senate this ban. Internationally, most countries have banned organ sales. However, India turns away from enforcement in some areas. The Philippines tolerates a market, and there is no legislation banning this in Iraq, Iran, and Israel. And before the fall of Saddam, Iraq actually had an active market.
As an ethicist, I'm sure you've looked at both sides of this. What are the arguments for and against allowing the exchange of money for human tissue?
Well, on the pro side, certainly a powerful argument is that people have the right to do with their bodies as they wish. They can think about the risks and benefits of making an organ available. They can decide whether the money is worth it to them. We trade in many things. We have surrogate mothers out there who are renting their wombs. We have people who do risky things, dangerous things, occupations. This is, selling a kidney is certainly not more risky than working in high steel or mining. So let people make that choice. And morally, if more organs are produced, that's a good thing. On the downside, ethically, markets tend to be associated in organ transplant with a loss of safety, so that when we had whole blood sales, we had a lot of people lying to get the money, and we had very high infection rates from hepatitis C. So making a market sometimes gives people a motive to not tell the truth and lowers the quality of what's out there. There's some very real fear morally against this idea that you'll exploit the poor, either internationally or domestically. It's not people who are wealthy are going to sell their organs, it's the poor, and it looks unseemly, let's say, to have a trade moving from the poor to the rich of body parts. If that's the best way you can earn a living, then you ought to do better at finding jobs for people, I guess people would say. And the other two major arguments are that the fear of giving people an incentive. If you put a price on your organs when you're dead, there may be people willing to take you there, so to speak, so if I'm worth...
Facilitate the process.
Yeah. If my relatives are thinking I can get $25,000, $30,000 by sawing Art up into his bits and getting returns on that, then maybe I'm not going to be aggressive in his care, or even worse, maybe I'll hustle him off that way to try and collect, and I become very nervous about identifying myself as an organ seller, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
And there are many religious groups that say, look, you don't own your body. That argument is wrong. It is a gift to you from God. You're a steward. But we don't have property ownership in bodies. We oppose slavery, even if people want to do it. We oppose prostitution. The human body is not an organ of commerce. It's immoral to treat it that way.
Here's an email we got from a listener in Wausau, Wisconsin. Why not spend the money to advertise and educate people about the shortage instead? If we're trying to create a more moral and philanthropic society, it would seem like a better idea to convince people to give organs rather than to bribe them.
Well, I'll take a shot at that. I think on the... to be fair, we've spent about 30 years advertising. I sometimes have laughed and said I want to do research to find out if organ donors, people who wind up donating, tend to be insomniacs, since I would grant that most of the advertisement seems to run at 2 in the morning.
Right.
But we have tried to get the message across. Relatively few people are unaware of transplant. Most Americans in surveys do know about it. So we may not have arrived at the best way to motivate their altruism, but it's not for want of trying. We've spent a lot of money trying to promote this. On the downside, or on the upside, rather, of trying to do this, I think in countries that have made systematic efforts to put people into hospitals, Spain, for example, has hired people to be at every hospital to talk about organ donation, to really counsel people when something tragic happens, and they've shown good returns on that. That system has been very productive in terms of producing donation.
David Kasserman, what about from your point of view? Might not more aggressive advertising be more persuasive?
No. In fact, it probably won't. As Arthur pointed out correctly, we've been trying it for 30 years, and the shortage gets worse every year. I have a paper, in fact, that is forthcoming in a journal called Contemporary Economic Policy, where we estimate the marginal effects of additional spending on education by the organ procurement organizations, and we find it to be totally insignificant in influencing organ donations. And in fact, we're currently spending at the margin another $50,000 to get one more organ donor. And so we have exhausted the returns from that particular avenue. And Mr. Kaplan mentioned Spain, and another author that writes in this area quite a bit, Lloyd Cohen, who is at George Mason University, just wrote about being in Spain and finding out that, yes, they are getting good returns from their advertising, and it turns out they're not advertising this fact, but they're paying their donors $300 to donate.
Hmm.
So it's not clear if it's advertising, education, or payment that's having the effect. With regard to his other arguments, I'm sure the listeners don't want to go through these. I've heard all of these before. I've been lecturing and talking and publishing in this area for the last 12 years. I have responded to all of these comments and with both theoretical arguments and empirical evidence in the book that you mentioned at the front of the show.
Okay. Well, let's get another caller on the line, and this is Darren, who's with us from Indianapolis.
Hi.
Hi.
I've been a healthcare worker for about 20 years, and I've worked in Brazil in several states. And so I had a couple of thoughts on this, and I'm even surprised at myself that I'm going to sort of advocate what I am. But I think there's two issues here with Brazil specifically, which are good to look at. And one is that I believe that in healthcare, I mean, the gentleman's speaking to economic models, but I'm going to speak to a healthcare model in addition to those economic models. And I believe that the models exist by which we can come up with some sort of, I hate the term, but market system for this. But I don't know that we want to put such a high price on it, maybe more of an honorarium or exchange for lost time, so forth. But beyond that, I mean, there's an issue at national borders. The poverty, the difference between the rich and the poor in Brazil is one of the most severe I've seen other than India in the world.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that the poorer Brazilians, the Indians, the African descendants, they are taken advantage of. It's extreme. I find that situation far more immoral than allowing someone to decide whether or not they want to sell an organ.
Mm-hmm.
So I believe that there are models that exist, both medically and economically. But I don't. Maybe we could say it's more of a fair trade than a free trade market in this case.
I'm trying to understand. Are you saying that there is such poverty and terrible poverty in Brazil and other places that the $6,000 or $10,000 you might be able to get for an organ would make a huge difference in that person's life and maybe be less morally repugnant than continuing to live in a cardboard box?
Yes, that's what I'm saying.
Okay.
And my quick question, just to see what the caller would think, is if I said there's a trade in prostitution internationally and people can make money and work their way out of poverty by doing that, what's your attitude there?
I think prostitution should be legal, first of all. When we make it legal and we fold them into the healthcare system and they have to go for a checkup every 30 days and they have to pay taxes, we don't have the problems that we have when prostitution's illegal.
That's a subject, Arthur Kaplan, it's a good question, but a subject for another program.
The reason I brought it up is that many people are going to object and say, look, you can make it legal, you can make it safer, but it's still exploiting people. And so if that's the best we can do in the third world, we got to do better. If the job that you're going to get is selling your body parts or selling your body, or for that matter being an indentured servant, is that the best we can do worldwide to say to someone, work your way out of poverty?
Well, I think Darren's point is that they're exploited already living in cardboard boxes.
Absolutely,
in the hillsides of Rio.
But saying to that, well, put it this way, saying, okay, you're living in a cardboard box, but now we ask you to sell your body parts. I mean, if you want to get out of the box, we've got a job for you. That may not be the direction ahead.
All right. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And let's get another call. This is Andrea, who's with us from Lansing, Michigan.
Hi.
Hi.
I'm calling in just to make a comment. I donated a kidney to my husband about a year and a half ago, and we're both, I think, young, in our mid-30s. And I just want to say that allowing some kind of reimbursement for donation would be an incredibly smart move because so many people are unable to donate because of the cost. There's no reimbursement. When I was donating, I had a part-time job because my husband was so sick. And there's no reimbursement there. Your medical costs are covered by his insurance, but you're not getting paid to buy your groceries. You're not getting any money to take care of your child. We have many, actually, that kidney that I donated did not work for him. And there have been, we've asked many, many other people to donate. And they can't do it. If there's no reimbursement from somewhere else, they can't afford to give up that time from their employer and their family in order to donate. So I can't imagine, I think this is such an incredible smart idea to pay live donors to be able to go forward with a donation.
Thanks very much for the call, Andrea. And
Thank you.
Appreciate it.
Neil, can I say something here?
Go ahead, David.
At the top of the hour, you know, we pointed out that we're using living donors and that they are the only people within the organ procurement and transplant process that aren't paid. The surgeon's paid, nurses paid, everybody's paid, the hospital's paid, everybody's paid but the donor. And what Andrea said is exactly correct. She's the one that ought to feel exploited. Mr. Kaplan says he doesn't want people being exploited by paying them. Well, I think they're being more exploited by not paying them, whether they are cadaveric donors or whether they are living donors.
And here's another point, this in an email from Catherine in Phoenix, Arizona, and I guess, Arthur Kaplan, this is to you. What do you mean people should be allowed to sell body parts? They already do. Wig makers will pay pretty good money for long hair. Blood banks pay for plasma. And when he was in college, my husband paid for his books with regular deposits at the local sperm bank. And I guess the question is, where do you draw the line?
Well, one place that we've drawn the line is around vital organs, so that if you have a renewable tissue or something that's non-invasive like hair, it's not that the body is so sacrosanct, so to speak, that you can't sell your fingernails or your hair, or some people actually have the sale of certain blood subproducts because they're rare.
Mm-hmm.
But when you're getting over to things like a piece of liver, your kidney, the argument is there, look, this is just too invasive. It basically leaves you scarred and damaged. If you're going to have that kind of sale going on, you're asking for people to get into trouble because they will lie to capture the funds, and they're going to give you organs that ultimately may be of lower quality. Remember the experience with blood in this country with whole blood sale was just remarkable for the number of people who gave other people hepatitis C because they were selling their blood. And as soon as that was banned, the rates fell by 100% of hepatitis C infection. So there's both a safety issue and a kind of, yeah, it's one thing to chop your hair off. It's another thing to saw your liver out, or at least a good portion of it.
I'm afraid we're going to have to leave it there, but I wanted to thank you both for your time and an interesting conversation. We just heard from Arthur Kaplan, director of the Center of Bioethics at the University of Pennsylvania, the author of Ethics and Organ Transplants. He was with us from his office in Philadelphia. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
And David Kasserman, thank you for your time today.
Thank you, Neil.
David Kasserman, a professor of economics at Auburn University in Auburn, Alabama. His book is The U.S. Organ Procurement System, A Prescription for Reform, and he was with us from his home in Auburn, Alabama.